Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm so glad you're tuning in today. This episode goes out to my fellow parents of teens or someone who knows that they will have a teen soon enough and they want to feel more prepared. And in particular, when it comes to anxiety and the ways in which your teen's anxiety might, you could see potentially or already is, triggering your own. You know those moments, you know, when your child's anxiety starts to stir that thing in you, that like rush of helplessness, that quickened breath, that urge to just fix it. As parents, we maybe hope that we'll be the calm in the storm, but sometimes their anxiety meets ours and the waves just get higher. So in this episode of Holding Space, I sit down with my dear friend, Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart, author of Love the Teen You Have, to talk about what's really happening beneath those reactive moments. Whether you're parenting a tween, teen, or just anticipating those years ahead, this one's for you. I'm so glad you're tuning in. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. So as parents, we often imagine that we'll be the calm in the storm when our kids feel anxious. But what many of us discover, I'm raising my hand here, is that their own anxiety can wake something up in us. And whether it's related to school, friendships, all the stuff that can happen in a teen's life, I find that it can wake up this sort of like helplessness in me, or this anxiety or this fear. And in these moments, it's just so easy to get pulled into the same storm that we're trying to guide them through. So today, I am so thrilled because I am joined by my dear friend, Dr. Anne Louise Lockhart, pediatric psychologist, parent coach, and author now of Love the Teen You Have. We're talking about what's really happening beneath those reactive moments and how we can shift from reacting out of fear to responding with some compassion and clarity and regulation. I am so glad we're having this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Cassidy. I'm so happy to be here and to see you on the screen.
I know. It's so good to see your face in real time, Okay, so I have a 14-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 5-year-old, and I talk a lot on this podcast about, you know, the peripartum, postpartum, toddler years of parenting. And I have stepped into this new era of parenting that I know this is what I do, is I live through something. I fumble, I make a ton of mistakes, and then I dive deep into learning the research and then how to translate that into things that are tangible, practical. And I got to do this now with teens because I'm so in it. You know, she's been in therapy before, and anxiety is actually something that she struggles with. And lo and behold, it's also something that I am quite familiar with. And we can just trigger the heck out of each other. My goodness. So, you know, it's something that we're working on together. And I'm just so thrilled to dive in with you. So I think many parents listening know that feeling, right? Maybe you don't have a teen yet, maybe you do, but when your child is overwhelmed, they're worried about something, and suddenly your own chest is tightening. It's like our nervous systems are speaking to each other. Mm-hmm. And so I would love it if you could help us understand what's actually happening there on both at biological and emotional level.
Yeah, a big part of when our teen is experiencing anxiety, it will activate our nervous system, right? When we talk about people's energy, their vibe, their, you know, the tone they come into a room with, like we pick up on those things from people, right? And so why wouldn't we, the person that we are closest to, hopefully that are with our teens or relationship, that their attitude will give us attitude and their anxiety will give us anxiety, right? Like we're like, why you got an attitude? It's like, well, you got an attitude. Like, well, okay, yeah, that is true. I do. Right? And so yeah, their anxiety is going to activate us. And for a couple reasons. One is, you know, we have several senses. We know the typical five, you know, smell, touch, sight, sound, taste, right? So we know those. But then we also have other senses, and one of those senses is this interoception. And interoception is this ability to know, like, our internal body state, when we're hungry, when we're thirsty, when we're jet lagged, when we're, but it's also like when we have to poop and pee, and when we have to, when we should stop eating, right? When we have food poisoning, like it tells us what's going on inside of our body. It's kind of like our literal gut, but also our intuition. And so that kind of, it goes into this sense of, but it's also including with our emotions and knowing how we feel. And many of us, we're now learning it in 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, how to be in tune with our emotions. But many of us did not grow up learning to be in tune with our emotions. I personally grew up in a family. I grew up in the Caribbean, and a lot of our culture and in my family as well is to pretend like we don't have problems. Stuff it down, sweep it under the rug, don't make a big issue out of it. Life is hard, then you move on, pray about it and bless it. Like all these things, like, okay, that is not helpful advice, right? And so a lot of those things then we've learned is just to kind of ignore our emotions, ignore our what our body and our gut is telling us. So we learn to numb out in a sense. So then we have this kid who is now having big feelings, and then what happens to us, it reminds us of the big feelings that we had, but no one really cared about, or they dismissed it, or they squashed it,
or they just didn't know how to what to do with it,
right?
Like,
so it can be very triggering and very kind of these big things that are happening, and so yeah, it can tend to bring those things into the forefront, and then we feel all these different feelings because we don't know how to deal with it. So yeah, so biologically, physiologically, emotionally, all of those things are happening because of the interoception, the senses, the nervous system, the parallel processing where they're going through it, so we're going through it. And then not to mention, there could be a social experience to it where our kid is going through something that maybe we went through at that same age. And we never felt like it was resolved, like getting ghosted or dropped by a friend, abandoned, broken up with, a failure, someone insulted us. Any of those kinds of things, but now they're going through it and you feel emotions not just from them, but also your unresolved stuff from the past that maybe you never got through. So man, it's messy. It's all these things that are happening, right?
So messy, right? Yes. And we have these like mirror neurons, which actually are like so helpful.
Yes.
In the sense of like, okay, like if I'm picking up on this cue based on your body language and your tone that like something's up, something's going on. My mirror neurons are like feeling it too. Like there's really helpful data in that, right? To be able to kind of check in because I'm picking up on something. What our nervous system picks up on, right, is like is threat. Like this is a threat. This is a threat to maybe their safety, our safety, our connection. Something bad is going to happen. Our brain picks up on that. And now we're in like fight, flight, freeze. Now, and then we're in this like little cycle together, because if I react with fight, right, or flight, right, or any of these, my kid picks up on that. They're going to have a response to that. And now we're just in this little storm cycling together in threat mode. And my gosh, the stakes are higher now, right?
Like,
and also they're just out in the world more. They're pulling away more. There's a lot of other potential risks to that really normal part of their development. And can I just name it? Like, that's, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And so absolutely. Anxiety is in the room. It is in the room.
Well, and right? The other thing too about that is that when you have a kid who's more wired to be anxious, yeah, they're scanning the room, they're noticing threats that may or may not be there. But the problem with anxiety is that it's this anticipatory thing, this, well, what if it might happen or it could happen? And so these kids that you have that are more on the sensitive side, the more anxious side, the more reading the room too well side, the negative part of that is they could be reading too much into something that's actually not a threat. Right. And then you're saying, it's okay, it's fine, you're not going to pass out and throw up, and you're not going to not have friends. Like, you're trying to reassure them logically, but they're not seeing it from that perspective because their brain and their emotions are telling them, well, what if these things happen? And let me give you an example, too, because we had this real-life experience that happened, and it's. I think this is the part of parenting that is so terrifying as well. So several months ago, we went on a cruise, a family cruise to Greece. And it was the first time my husband, my son, my daughter had been on a cruise. I went on one when I was a teenager, and it was memorable. I've talked about it forever. I went when I was 13, always remembered it. It was wonderful, okay? But it was the Caribbean, never went to Greece. So we're going to on this cruise, and we're in the third, I think, port stop. People kept telling me it was going to be hot. I didn't realize how hot it really, what they really meant, okay? It's June, ridiculously hot. So we're going through this amazing thing. We're going through all these different historical sites. We have an amazing tour guide. It's so hot. So we come back to eat at this restaurant, and my son, who's very sensitive and tends to run anxious, he's 13. Mm-hmm. He's like, hey, Mom, I've got these spots on my arm and legs. And I was like, so I look at them and I'm like, oh, they're probably just heat rash. Like, that's what it looked like to me. Like, what else could it be, right? Yeah. And he's kind of borderline hypochondriac, okay? So he's always complaining about something physical. So I'm just like, dude, don't start. We're on vacation. Like, that's what I'm thinking in my head, right?
Yeah, right.
So then we continue to do some more exploration. We go to this sandy beach. Very hot, coiling hot. We walk through it. He comes back to the table. Now he's got spots all over his feet. And I was like, well, that's kind of odd.
Yeah, weird place, yeah.
Weird. So we go back to the cruise ship. We go to the medical doctor because we're like, something's not right. They test his blood. They realize, like, there's something not right. His platelets level is low. They say, you need to go to the hospital the next day. We go, and he has a blood disorder. Life-threatening. This fear that he had that was on overdrive helped him to see that something was up. Because we wouldn't have noticed that, right?
Yeah.
So now he has this thing that, thank goodness he noticed it. And then I listened and we followed through. We end up staying in Greece 5 days, and he had to have like this life-saving treatment that actually worked really great. And he was able to recover once we got home.
Wow.
But it's like, see, this is the problem with anxiety, right? It's like you
read it. Sometimes it gets it right.
Sometimes it gets it right, right? So now we're back home. It's been months. But now every little thing, I think I have to go to the ER, my stomach's hurting. What if this? What if that? What if I go to DC and things are like, what if this? And I was like, sweetheart, it's fine. Well, what if it's not fine? And I think that's the problem with anxieties. Like, sometimes it's right. Like, if you keep, like, you know, playing your cards, sometimes you are right. But it's that nervous system thing that is so hard that we have to be more gentle on ourselves as parents, because we have to then calm it down. And how do you do that when danger is lurking everywhere? And that's what your anxiety keeps telling you.
Right. So anxiety, right? It's this very normal human emotion we all have. Like, it's the thing that pops up that's like, hey, put on your seatbelt, because there's all these potential things that could happen if you don't, right? And it's like, thank you, anxiety, for that reminder. And the anxiety is the part of us that can pop up and think of all the catastrophes that could happen that keep us from maybe taking a meaningful risk, right? Or being able to function. So I'm curious here, in this situation, was it anxiety that showed up for you in response to his anxiety, or what were you feeling?
You know, so I was actually initially annoyed, and that's what I hear.
Thanks for naming that, because I think that's really, really normal.
Yes, and I hear that from a lot of parents when they bring in their anxious kids for therapy. They're just like, they are getting on my last nerve. They can't go to sleep. They're thinking someone's going to murder us in our sleep. They're thinking someone's going to break in. Like, everything is always a danger all the time, and it's exhausting. Yeah. So, no, my initial reaction was like, freaking what the? So annoyed right now. And then I was like, okay, wait, we have evidence now. Something's not right, because that's not a bump. That's not a heat rash. And you're reacting to something that's not right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then I was able to
see. A little bit of space there to be like, okay, I'm annoyed. That's a very normal human reaction to have when you're on vacation and your kid starts complaining about something like this.
Yes.
And then a little bit of space where you were able to be like, all right, let's look at just the data.
Yes.
So I really think anxiety is a data, it's a data messenger.
Yes.
But it does it in a really annoying way.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right. Because the thing is, he is very observant. He is very aware. And I appreciate that about him. It's like, but sometimes you got to turn down the dial just a little bit, right? And so, so I think the initial was being annoyed and frustrated. And then I was concerned. And then once we got to the hospital and they were sharing all these things with the language barrier and the culture difference and all that stuff, it felt like how they were delivering it is like, he might die. Like, it was that severe. And so having to then deliver that information to him in a way that's gentle and kind and not oversharing, like all of that stuff is like you're thinking in your head, what if I hadn't listened? What if I hadn't responded? What should I have done it sooner? Should I have listened sooner? You know, all these things that start to come in where that parent shame and guilt start popping up when you have been proven to be wrong, and anxiety's like, see?
See, that one time in this really important situation, I got it right. Yeah, and so it's about developing this new relationship with anxiety, right? Like both our own first, I think, and foremost, right? And then also to our kids, because it's like we have, it's like inside out. It's like our two little anxieties are like at the console, just like, you know, just spiraling out with each other.
Hey there, if you are a California, Nevada, or New York-based parent, we are accepting new clients. If you reach out to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com, you can learn more about my group private practice that supports millennial parents. If you're struggling with triggers as a parent, anxiety, relationships, boundaries, if you're trying to process a traumatic birth experience, or you're navigating fertility or pregnancy loss, we are here for you. If you are ready to take the next step in getting support with therapy, head to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com. Then click on the contact page and fill out that form. That is you sending an email directly to me. I will follow up with you and I will make sure that you will get connected with the right therapist in our group. And that's me included. We work with both individuals and couples. So if you are ready to take that next step, head to that link in the show notes. I am so excited to connect with you.
And because really what I think anxiety is it's just that part, is that it's a data messenger, and it's a part of us that worries that I don't know if I'm equipped to handle this thing, right? Like, could I survive this thing? And I don't know if I feel like if I have the resources or the skills or the tools to do that, right? And so, you know, I think that, you know, if we can respond to anxiety with compassion, right? And recognizing that sometimes the data is helpful, sometimes it's not. And then finding ways to get more resource and feel like we actually can trust ourselves and the tools we have. And that's a huge game changer. So you talk in your work about the difference between reacting and responding. And I really love that distinction, because sometimes our helping, you know, can actually come from our own anxiety, not from necessarily like grounded presence with our kids. So I'd love to hear more from you about this. Like, what does reacting typically look like in a parenting dynamic that you see in your work, especially when it comes to anxiety? And then how can parents begin to notice the signs that they're slipping into reactivity rather than a really intentional responsiveness?
Yes, this is one of my favorite topics. And actually, I have a whole chapter in my my book on this, the kind of the react versus respond. Right. And I have an acronym for it as well, too, because what I see as reacting, which is very common, like my frustration and being annoyed, is immediate. It's poor self-control, poor emotional regulation. You are not in the, well, I'm a good mom mode. You're just reacting. That's when you feel like a bad mom. You feel like a bad parent. It's very fear-based. And it's where our nervous system is taking over and saying, I need to fix this right now. My kid is failing. They don't have any friends. you know, they don't shower, they don't clean their room. I need to fix this right now and I need to get into reactivity mode. And so it's very much punishment, impulsive, reactivity based. And because it feels...
What my daughter would call it is, Mom, you're coming in hot. You're coming in hot, Mom.
Right.
She'd say. Right. And I'm like, yep, you're right. Okay.
Coming into the building, guns blazing, right? Yeah. Right? Because you have to do it now. And my husband has told me this. He's like, you know, when one of the kids is acting up and have an attitude and I see him starting to simmer and I was like, do not respond right now. And he's like, but if we don't say anything, they'll think it's okay. And I was like, well, they know it's not okay. They know it's not okay. You react, it'll be like you're just as messy as they are. So let's go for a rage walk instead. So that's been my latest
thing. A rage walk.
Sometimes it's 30 minutes, sometimes it's an hour and a half. But we go for a rage walk and we complain about the kids, like literally. And then we come back completely new, right as rain. It's amazing. But that's where you have to notice it, because then if you don't, you're going to react and you're going to feed the beast just as much. Mm. And now you're both in this kind of animalistic, you know, you're unfair, you're immature, and it's just, and then you're just as immature as they are, and it's just not helpful. The responding is more intentional. That is more thoughtful, it's more grounded, it's more rational, it's more disciplined. It's like taking that breath, going on that rage walk, talking to a friend, drinking a hot cup of tea, eating something sour. It's like checking in with yourself and deciding what to say and what not to say, or what to do next even. And for me, the biggest difference is like, even like a 5-second pause, like the kids are being loud or they're saying something rude, or they say, brah, or 6-7, like whatever it is that really irritates you. Then you can be like, okay, don't react. It's not that big of a deal. It's gonna pass. A new word is gonna come through someday. Like it's you know, and being able to let yourself move through it.
This is my love language, space, the rage walk. I'm obsessed with that. that is amazing. And also, I feel like two things come to mind too as we're talking about this that are really big parts of this cycle breaking work is repair, because we're going to come in hot sometimes, or we're not going to take the rage walk. We're going to take the rage out on people around us. Let's talk about that first, the repair piece, because I feel like that feels really, really important here.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about how a repair shows up.
Yeah, the repair is something that I can probably say with some certainty most of us did not experience with our own parents. And repair is saying when you've screwed up, when you've stepped out of bounds, when you overreacted, when you reacted in a way that wasn't helpful, when you overcriticized, when you labeled. It's basically saying that, it's communicating rather, I have respect for you as my minor dependent teenage child. I have enough respect for you. I love you and care enough for you and about you that I can say when I've messed up. Yeah. When I said that was really harsh. When I said I told you so after your friend just dumped you, when I told you that of course she's going to dump you because I told you so, like that was harsh. That was out of place. I shouldn't have said that. Like it's being able to take responsibility for when you step out of bounds and when you are less than kind or you're not showing up as the parent you'd like to be. So it's just apologizing. It's not fixing or jumping into rescue or helicoptering or snow plowing. It's basically saying I was wrong.
And I think that just that helps slow down the process, right? And models to them how to repair, because I'm imperfect, they're going to be imperfect. And so the other piece, which I think is connected to this that I wanted to name that feels important in all this, is connection capital, right? Mm-hmm. Like just like outside of the triggering situations or the hot moments, right? Like finding those things that connect. So just talk about 6-7, okay? So who knows? No one knows what this is and why and what it means. But the other day we were playing hide and go seek with my youngest and some little cousins, and my tween son, who is everything is 6-7, was I looped him in to play with us, right? And so I'm hiding, he's counting, and he's counting to 15, and he's going 5. Or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And before he says it, I yell out from my hiding spot, 6-7. And he died. Because this was one of those things where like there were for sure moments of like annoyance of like, really, really, bruh, what is this? Like, come on. Like, why are we continuing this 6-7 thing? But like to say it to him, to like get hit to like, and then I was like, got him, you know? And he was like, oh, mom, but he was laughing. And it's like those moments, right? Mm-hmm. Or I always say with my 14-year-old daughter that like boba is like connection currency. So like just boba runs or like bring boba to like the game, like for her and her friends. And I'm like, this is how I stay relevant is I bring you guys boba, you know? and it's obviously so much more than that, like the laughter, the boba, these all really do count. And then it's you know, just being there in the moments where like, actually, you don't have to even say anything or have this like genius, like life advice when they're in a hard moment. It's literally sometimes just like being there and being like, oh my gosh, that sounds really rough. And like, you don't have to say, like literally that can be it. And I think connection capital really becomes important in all of this too, right? Because when we screw up and our anxiety gets, you know, triggered and now we're spiraling with them or we come in hot or we react with annoyance or, right? Like if that connection capital is there, right? Like, and then the repair comes, the stability of the connection remains, mm-hmm. would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because we're also modeling how they can respond to when they mess up, when they have an attitude or they roll their eyes or they call you bra and they've disrespected you. Like, it's also modeling that, oh, like I can redo. And that's what I teach my kids. That's what I teach my clients, my teenage clients a lot, is like, if you're in the middle of something that's about to be very disastrous, you don't have to follow it through to completion. Like, you could be like, what? Okay, mom, that was way disrespectful. My tone was way off, you know, 6-7, bro, I'm sorry. Like you could stop it in that moment and you could back it up and you can say, that was inappropriate. Can we restart? Yeah. Can we do it over? And so I think that when we do it for ourselves and we model it for them, then it's also them seeing that, my parent respects me too. Like, they see me as a human being worthy of that. And you know what, Cassidy, it's really interesting. Whenever I put on my Instagram page about parents respecting teens, I get so much negativity from that. Mm. It triggers so many people when they hear that, because they're like, well, no, they need to respect us. And what if they don't respect us? It's like, well, does that mean you tit for tat? Like, they just respect you. So you like, that's ridiculous. Like, of course you're supposed to respect your teenagers and you're supposed to show them love unconditionally. That's why the name of the book was the easiest for me, the title, because it's like, it all went around love the teen you have. It's like unconditional, without anything else, unconditional positive regard for them. No matter what, no matter how much they show up in an attitude, like, you still love them. It doesn't mean you're accepting it. It means you're just loving them.
Loving them. Yes. And during this really stormy, turbulent era of their life, right? And that sometimes, like, we're playing the long game sometimes, right?
Like, we are.
Sometimes, like you're not going to see that. Like, if you repair, right, and you're showing respect, you're not going to see that necessarily right away. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as their prefrontal cortex and everything is still developing. But, like, we're also playing the long game here. Like, this is about this long-term, lifelong relationship where I want to be in connection with them. And if that means that I'm going to be the adult in the room during a turbulent era who's going to continue to show them respect, even when it's difficult for them to, for that part of them to show up in that way for me, right? It doesn't mean that I'm not going to have boundaries, right? Like, I will still say, hey, not cool. I know that there's a part of you that knows how to say that differently to me, right? Like, we can still communicate, like, that wasn't okay. And right, like, we're still gonna be the grown-up in the room who, like, is gonna hopefully do our own work so that we can stay regulated in the face of all this, because it is a lot. I want to talk more about this title. I love it. Okay, so love the teen you have. It just feels so powerful, especially I feel like in this age of comparison and pressure. And I imagine that when, you know, we're anxious about our teens' behavior or their future, it can really be hard to stay connected to who they are right now, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do our fears about our teens' future, how do you see that shaping the way we respond to their anxiety in the present? And what does it look like to love the teen that we have, even when their anxiety, attitude, or behavior is really challenging us?
Yeah, I think that's a tough part. That's a tough question, right? Like, how do we love them, accept them, move through the difficulties that they either put on themselves or they put on us? And for me, a big part of it is being able to delight in them, to know that I treasure and love you. I love your, like when my son giggles, I love his little giggle. I love the way my daughter sneezes. I don't love the way my son sneezes because it sounds so loud, but then we joke about it. Like, right? It's like, wow, that was a lot.
You know? He has the giggle. That's
right.
That's
exactly. You know, I love their smiles. I love how his eyes are bright. Like, it's just delighting in them, just thinking that I delight in you. And so even one of the things that I do and I tell parents, and this is a really good kind of practical thing to teach you and show you and help you to love them through all the mess, especially if it feels messy now. We have a digital calendar. I had a partnership that I did a couple years ago with a brand, and they have this digital calendar, and I was able to upload pictures from years ago as well as currently. And a lot of the pictures, and I have it on the kitchen counter, so as we eat breakfast, you can see it cycling through. And a lot of that delighting and loving them through that is they see these pictures. When did that happen? Oh, it was my first teeth? Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so cute. Where were we? Oh, and it's all these things of showing how loved they are. And it's such a good reminder when times are difficult that it's like, oh, you were so cute. Your cheeks were so chubby. Oh my gosh, that was so funny when we drove to the park. Like, it was all these things. Yeah. And then we can tell stories based on that. And so I think it's really about helping us as a parent remind ourselves that even in the difficult times, that it's not always difficult. It won't always be difficult. Mm. And they come back. They come back, you know? So even if you have one that's been separated from you, you feel like you've screwed up your relationship with them, they've shut you out, maybe they've already moved out, like it's never too late, and you continue to persist and push through that. All the difficulties, whatever it is that's going through it. Because I know that you probably see this in your work with adults, and I see this because I also work with adults. So many adults tell me when they've been estranged from their parents that they wish that they could reconcile.
Yeah.
And that they would reconcile in the moment if their parents did. And a lot of these rifts happen during the teenage years many times. Yeah. So I think a lot of this is really just loving them through these things, delighting in them, letting them know that their struggles are not too big for you and that you can handle it. And that's so important, because many times we don't get that message. We get like, oh, I'm too much for my parent. Or they're dealing with their own struggles, and so they can't handle mine. And and so a lot of this stuff, and really for me, a big part of it is one of my early messages that I got, because I was raised by an amazing mom. She was divorced when I was 3. I have 2 older siblings, so I was the youngest of 3. And I remember her telling me very early on in life that because she was having so many struggles with my dad, and they were starting to split up and having issues when she was pregnant with me, well, that she was aware of at that point, she had said to herself, this baby is mine, and this baby will make me happy. Mm. And that was my role. I was meant to make her happy. So that when I had struggles, I couldn't share them. That was my internal message. Well, I can't share them because I'm supposed to be happy. And then when I finally did share things that were bothering me that she needed to know about, she couldn't handle it. She couldn't handle it, which is what created the rift in our relationship when I turned 13. Because I felt like, well, if you don't care about the things that matter to me, then screw you. And that's when a lot of that stuff then went downhill. And so for me, a big part of being motivated to write this is that, and of course we've since reconciled and we have a really great relationship, but that stuff that happens during those years, it's because it's not that parents don't love their teen. It's because they're overwhelmed, they're tired, they feel angry about a deadbeat husband or dad. their stuff is too much, so they don't know how to handle their own teen's stuff, like my mom happened with her. And so for me, I wanted to make sure that parents didn't go through the same thing. And teens, I didn't want them to go through the same thing my mom and I did. And I wanted them to feel like there's a different way. Even when it feels overwhelming, even when it feels like too much, like just the simplest, just loving them where they're at. Just start from there.
Loving them where they're at. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of like some radical acceptance.
Yes,
in that too,
absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
And like maybe a little bit of finding ways that to get into their world a little bit, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And I do. I talk about radical acceptance a lot in the book. Just really, yeah. it's that same idea. It's like you don't have to join them on the battlefield. You can walk off the battlefield and you can just be with them through it. Well, what if they don't talk? That's okay. Keep showing up and don't overtalk, right?
But keep showing up.
Keep showing up.
Mm. Okay. So tell us now, where can people get your book? Because this is going to be a gift to the world. I cannot wait to hold it in my hands.
Yes.
Talk to us. Like, where can folks get it? And where can people find you?
So they can find it. So I finally got the hardcover yesterday. Yay. Yes. So they can find it. Most people have been getting it on Amazon. But if you go anywhere books are sold, you can find it on Target, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. A lot of local book places, bookstores will find it. You can go on my website at drannelouiselockhart.com or on my Instagram and find the link to that. If they're purchasing it before October 28th, which is when the book is released, they can also get a free bonus exclusive freebie. It's a 7-day connection reboot for parents and teens, and they can download that. So that is something that they can get. But yeah, that is where they can find it. October 28th is the release date.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Having just turned in my manuscript, I have so much respect for
it's a lot
anyone
of work.
Who's ever written a book. My goodness. It is such a, it's also such a vulnerable experience, mm-hmm. I feel like, to put your work out there in that way. And so I am so glad for your willingness to not let anxiety get in the driver's seat and, like, you know, to do the thing, to put your wisdom in writing and to share it with all of us. So thank you so much for being here. And folks can find links to all of this in the show notes.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.